We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, but today doesn't feel that way. We are divided in more ways than one, and the media and the powers that be all have their own agenda. The people of this great nation no longer care about the truth, they only care about the side they are on. At Poor 360, I am trying to change that, by bringing you the facts and history so we can all learn something and make our own decisions. Tune in every Tuesday to be a part of that journey.
What on earth is that?
It's a Journey into Comics Network production!
Tell me something, my friend. You ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight?
What?
I always ask that of all my prey. I just like the sound of it.
Brought to you by the power of the Journey into Comics Network. This is the Journey into Comics Podcast, the show that's 100% dedicated to everything nerd. With your hosts, the Podfather, Nate Phillips, the Podmaster, Brandon Stone, and the Journey into Comics Network stepdad, Tyler McLaughlin.
Time to make the chimichangas.
30 seconds.
Hey!
Excellent!
Finally. What did you do?
Fred.
And here we go.
Can somebody tell me what kind of a world we live in where a man dressed up as a bat gets all of my press? This town needs an enema.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome back to another episode of Journey into Comics. Today, it's Journey into Comics 304. As always, I am your pod father, Nate. Today, joining me once again, the Podmaster, King Kong Bundy of the Journey into Comics Network. Welcome back once again. Brando, not like size-wise, bro.
So give me
like,
the five count just, here. Give me the five count. How you doing, Nate? You doing pretty good this morning? Are you awake?
Dude, it's going well. Of course, as soon as we start recording this, we get some technical difficulties
getting lagged
right out of the fucking gate, because of course we do. Oh man, I don't know, bro, but you know, it's good in my neck of the woods. I'm a little overtired at this point, but you know, we have a lot of stuff to talk about today. Hopefully people can even hear what we're saying. I don't know how bad the lag for me is right now.
Not bad.
Okay, good. On your end, it was kind of ferocious. That was why I was a little tentative. But you know, just hanging out, Brando, just trying to live my best life. And, you know, there's so much different news and topics and things we want to talk about today. But how are you, man? What's good in your world?
Well, you know, I'm doing better than I deserve. It's been a challenging weekend, emotionally, I guess. I guess they said I handled it well. Yesterday was the, graveside services for my dad. So, you know, it being what it was, everybody said I handled it very well and they were very impressed. I know it was a very challenging day, for me to say the least, but you know, we got through it. We're on the other side, you know, there's just this vicious cycle of life that we're all on, and that no matter what we want to do, no matter what we can do, we're all in that vicious cycle. We can't
stop. From the day we're born, we're dying, bro.
Exactly. We can't stop it. And even though it's hard, even though we got to press on, you know, like I know some people, you know, everybody's different. Everybody's different in the way that they cope and the way that they, you know, grieve, I guess. And I guess it's been 2 months, you know, so in a way that shock is gone, but it never really leaves you, you know, and it never technically ever will, because when you lose somebody who's that close to you, it will affect you. And it's, you know, something that was, I don't know who said it, because I don't think anybody actually said it to me. But it was just something that I saw, you know, it's not about finding a way to get through it, or it's not like trying to get over it, because it never happens. It's basically now you're trying to just live your life with that void.
It's coming to terms with the new normal.
Yeah. Yeah.
You absolutely have to essentially cope and realize, like, well, I can't undo time. Mm-hmm. I don't have superpowers to change the past. This is what I have to get through. And either I'm going to wreck my life and go down a very destructive path that's going to hurt me and the people I love, or I've got to pick myself up by my bootstraps and move on. And moving on is a hard thing. It isn't easy. You don't want to feel like that's even an option. Like, move on. That was my family. Like, how do I just move on from that? But you also have to realize, like, they've moved on. They moved on from things before they passed away mm-hmm. that were in their life, and they experienced it just like you are now. Yep. So it is like you said, the vicious cycle. It is difficult, but
also the world doesn't stop just because somebody's gone, just because somebody was important to you is no longer there, whether that is a death or even a breakup. You know, it's like, yes, we cannot hide the fact that emotionally is affecting us, but it's also the point of, like, we still have to go to work, we still have to take care of our kids, we still have to go to the grocery store, even the smallest thing. And you know, those things can be very challenging for people to be able to deal with and to cope, but we have to find a way, whether or not it's, you know, moving on or trying to find someone to help you move on, or, you know, by all means, don't suppress those feelings. You cannot.
Well, that becomes very destructive too. Suppressing mm-hmm. your feelings, then you have this wall where you don't feel those feelings. You're like, oh, whatever, I'm fine. I'm not feeling anything, and everything's cool. And then at some point, the levee will break.
Yeah.
And that break is going to be 10 times worse if you would have just let it happen naturally.
Well, and the thing is that I also feel like, it, even in my own terms, I'm doing that not on purpose, not being aware that I'm doing it, just because I have to move on, because I have to exist, because I have to take care of my kids. You know, I have to push it to the side. And sometimes I get distracted and I don't deal with it. And then it's like, oh, hey, yeah, that sucked, didn't it? Yeah, shit. Now I'm sad. Now I'm like miserable. Emotional wreck right now because out of the blue, something like a song or this or something reminds me. And maybe I'm not alone in that because as adults, we do have to carry on. And I would like to think that I'm not suppressing to a point of it being a huge negative.
Okay. To touch on songs emotionally moving us, I do want to bring this up a little bit because, you know, I, as of right now, am very fortunate to say I still have both my parents and haven't gone through that. And I don't know what's that is like, and you know, not excited for that at some point. But even now in my life, there are songs that I listen to that future me starts crying now
mm-hmm.
because I can, like, connect in a different, well, not even, it's not anticipation as much as I will be listening to a song and I'll be so deeply connected, and especially with some of the music we've been listening to as of late,
mm-hmm.
Going through Rank 'Em All to work on our show that's coming soon here. Some of those songs are very personal with me and my dad. So even when I'm not thinking dark thoughts, those songs hit me in a way, I get the chills or whatever, and then boom, it's happened. I'm just a wreck for a second. I just have to, like, okay, everything's cool. Like, nothing's bad yet. But I know that those songs are going to change for me. Certain things will change for me over time.
What I will say, you know, not to spend too much time on this here on the show, that we're going to be talking about a bunch of uplifting nerd stuff. But just as
gotta be real.
Yeah, just gotta be real. And this goes to you, Nate, but also to everybody at home listening. Take the time to sit down with your parents to get everything in order. Get their affairs in order. Make sure, if they don't have life insurance, to get life insurance, or you know, to make sure that your name is on, or as a beneficiary, or if you're not, whoever's going to be taking care of, you know, their estate afterwards. That way, that's not a burden on you, because that is just one more thing on top of grieving the loss of a loved one. That, you know, I hate to say it, but it, like, if it was like, you know, a sibling, it's a little bit different. When it's your parent, now you have responsibilities on top of.
Because they're the archetype. They are, they're who created you. And everything you've done up to that point, you look up to them and say, well, you're setting the example. What am I supposed to do now?
Yeah.
And when that goes away, oh fuck, I'm the example now. I have to set the tone. Like it's me. There's no more steps. The step has now become, I am the top step.
Yeah.
And that is definitely, yeah, man, I understand there's gotta be difficulties in that for sure.
Well, and it just makes it a lot easier. If all those things, cause that's never a fun conversation to have with your parents. Like, hey, when you're dead, what do I do? Can we make sure we have this set up that way, you know, there's no financial burden on me or we know exactly what to do, as far as what you want with your, you know, what done with you. Do you want to be buried? Do you want to be cremated? Do you want to be put somewhere? Do you want to be made into a tree? Do you want me to make you into a guitar so I can hang it up on my wall? You know, like,
oh,
I don't.
That's a fucking clever idea.
That's a
Brando.
Clever
Holy
idea.
Shit.
I know, right?
Damn, like, that's morbid. I'm not going to lie. It's kind of fucking morbid, but it's cool.
Weird.
Like,
it's
I would,
pretty weird. Like,
check out that guitar. It's my dad. What do you mean? Like, it literally is my fucking dad. It's his ashes inside the guitar.
Like, is that a Gibson? No, that's a Stone. That's my dad.
Oh, I see what you did there.
No, man. But no, just please take the time to have those uncomfortable conversations, because especially if you're reaching our age into the 30s and your parents are probably going to be going into their 60s if they haven't already, it's time. It's time to start having those conversations. My dad was 61. Today is his birthday, and he would have been 62. And
damn,
so,
brother.
It can happen. It can absolutely happen. Have that conversation. Unfortunately, we weren't able to before. So a lot of those decisions, a lot of those things I had to deal with, just fell on me, and we had to do it. We had to take care of it. And with my mom,
left
it's
you
not
scrambling.
Yes. And that's not what he wanted. He wanted to get stuff taken care of. We just never had a chance to. But my mom, we've already kind of, even before this, like we she'd put me on as beneficiary and all that stuff. That way it's like not a question, you know, if anything happens to her, X, Y, Z, you know, mm-hmm. And so, you know, please Nate and everybody else out there who has, you know, still has parents or anything like that, you know, take the time.
Get your affairs in order. Damn it. Be an adult.
Yes, absolutely. Do it, because it's just one less thing, because I kind of feel like for me personally, that was an added stress, along with coronavirus, along with my work, along with getting the time that I needed to have to grieve. And I didn't get that.
2020 so far has been like you getting out of the shower and a little clown running into the bathroom as soon as you walk down the shower and wiped your face and going, surprise, and throwing nails in your eyeballs. And you're like, oh, God damn it. What the fuck? I wasn't ready for any of this. What?
Not only that, but it's really cold in the bathroom and you just took a really hot shower. And so not only that, but when you first step out of the shower to grab your towel, your nutsack shrivels and everything just gets a lot smaller. So when the clown sees you and throws those nails, now he's laughing at you at like your lack of manhood.
Even more.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's, he's like, look at your tiny balls, motherfucker.
Oh, it's cold. Can't... Anyway.
Like, I left the window open. It's -6. Outside, but I needed some air.
-6 Celsius.
Oh my God.
Yeah, no, it's cold. Brutal. 2020
it's
is cold.
Code.
It is cold. Anyway,
it's
guys,
it's a cold hearted bitch.
This is Journey into Comics, a show where we talk about everything nerd except for the first 10 minutes. As Nate alluded to, we have been working on Rank 'Em All. We are 4 episodes in. We're not going to release any of those episodes until they're all done. And also, that's a series that. It's difficult to put it into terms of whether or not it's going to be a season or just a series. When it's done, it's done, because there's already been talks to do another series after this one that doesn't involve me or you.
And another one that probably does, that we've discussed as well. So yeah. I guess the way I see Rank 'Em All, just a quickly tangent, we are the kind of the network head, so we might as well chat about this. But like, for me, the idea of Rank 'Em All is cool because it's anthology style. It doesn't matter when and where and what and why. Like, okay, so the next one that we aren't involved with gets done, and you know, I think that would maybe be perfectly suited for the Podcastrophy feed, but I digress. That releases as soon as it's releasing there, then now, oh, Journey into Comics Network can start releasing the actual Rank 'Em All audio versions, you know, and then we can keep rotation constantly so that everything is always being featured and it's just utilized where we need it. It doesn't have to be like, oh my God, we have to have this show every Thursday. But if we have 6 episodes that we can put out in the next 6 Thursdays, cool. You know?
Well, exactly. And the idea behind, you know, using the different feeds, because there's two different feeds right now with the network feed and the Podcastrophy feed, you know, because, you know, Dick does stuff over there that isn't featured here. And so it helps, you know, hey, you guys, if you guys go on and go listen to that, you know, to the first series, it's over there, you know, or it will be when it releases. And while you're there, go check out some of the other stuff that he does other than Podcastrophy. You know, he does some, me and Mike did a one-off episode of Game Addicts Eat. That was just over there where we tried the Beyond Burger. I think it was from TGI Fridays,
which is like the top search when you search Game Addicts on Podbean.
Is it really?
It's like one of the top three because I clicked it. I thought it was the show feed, and I was like, "What the shit? Oh, episodes! I need to go to podcasts, not episodes."
Okay, so it's one of the top searched episodes. Well, okay, yeah. because I don't name my episodes Game Addicts Podcast Episode 1. I name it just Episode Whatever. And so, yeah, when you search episodes, that will be, because that's the only show on the entire Podbean thing that has the words Game Addicts in it.
There are some on the network's main feed, though.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So,
yeah, you're right.
Technically, there might be a couple up there, but we digress. We're just nerding out about this.
Digressing is what we do best.
You know, Brando, just to quickly touch on it, it is Monday as this is releasing, and tomorrow I'm actually guesting on another network.
That's awesome.
Weird. What? What's happening with this world? I'm going all over the place, but some of your buddies reached out to me from the Endgamer Boss program and said, hey, we'd love to have you on. We have this really fun concept. We're going to cross over. We'll do a little segment where we're kind of like featuring you and talking about the network and everything, which was a really fun time. And they asked some really cool questions that maybe I was a little too enlightened to answer accurately, but
at least you're being honest.
Hey, I mean, it was a good time. We were having a blast. It was a really great conversation with those dudes. But I would be remiss if I didn't mention that episode that does drop tomorrow on their feed features us talking about what comic books, whether they've already been featured as a video game or not, would we make into video games? And then who would you have be your publisher? What kind of style? Do you have any, you know, background for what you would do with the actual game other than just like, I would like to see Game X on PS9. You know, like it was actually pretty well thought out, and it was a really fun conversation that we had. It went really long, longer than I expected, longer than they expected. But yeah, good dudes. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, if you guys get a chance, go check out the Endgame Boss program, their network of shows over there, including the Endgame Boss podcast, and also the show that I do with Jeremy, the proprietor of the Endgame Boss program and podcast called the World Gaming Trade Show that releases like the last week of every month. It's like the last Monday of every single month that game or that World Gaming Trade Show show comes out. So that's a really cool show that we've been doing ever since March. I think we've been doing that, and you know, it's a really cool different show. It's kind of the same concept that Nate did with the comic books and what would you make a game and who would make it, except for we take games that have been from, you know, forgotten, or they've been dropped, or maybe there's only one entry and it didn't do well.
Bring back 10 Star.
Yeah. And then we select a few games and we talk about almost like in a that PBS Antiques Roadshow where but you're pitching an idea, you know, it's like, hey, you know, here's like we did Legend of Dragoon in one of the episodes. We did Snatch.
I think that was the first episode.
And so it's like, hey, you know who would make it? Who like, and it, we're open. We can be. It can be anybody. Like, imagine these IP rules don't exist. Sometimes I think it is more challenging to play within the IP rules. That's a spoiler alert for an episode that's coming out in August, something like that. Maybe, but maybe it was a game that I did. I don't know. But no, it's a great show. And go check out their feed over there.
Absolutely. It was a great time. And you might be seeing more from them with us at some point. We've got some stuff cooking in the kitchen, so I can't wait. Brando, are we pretty much ready to get down into the dirty and talk about what's going on in the world of comic books and all things nerd?
20 minutes in, I think we're ready.
All right. So first thing I want to hit you with, I saw a headline. I read like a couple sentences and was like, oh, save it for the show because I feel like it's going to open the floodgates. They're rebooting Power Rangers again. And let me just read fine specifically here I just want to read directly from the headline just because of the the things it said specifically. Reboot. There it is. Should be. Aha, here we go. So here are the things that the headline itself said. I'll, and then I'll read inside what it says. Just the headline says the Power Ranger movie reboot details include time travel, a female lead. So maybe like a Kimberly type leading the team instead of it being a Jason, which cool, whatever. I'm fine with that. Lord Zedd and more. Interesting that they're bringing Lord Zedd to the big screen now, just shortly after Robert Axelrod passed away.
Yeah.
And he was never featured in any of the movies at all, even though I'm pretty sure Robert Axelrod had credits in at least the Power Rangers movie as Finster, if I am correct.
Well, Zedd was in the original movie.
That's right. He is in the it's been a while since I've seen that film. God.
Yeah, because
like far too long.
Because in the first movie, Ooze comes in and kind of takes over. The second movie, I think, that doesn't Diva Talks like call them, and Rita answers the phone, and like they were sleeping, and you can do
yes.
Zedd is just snoring in the background.
yes, man, I need to watch that. I think it's on.
Yeah, because that one's Turbo. The second one's Turbo, right?
Yeah.
See the okay
Turbo. I know you can see on HBO Max.
Okay,
that's cool. I think the first movie might still be on Netflix.
Really quick, what did you think of those original movies? That first movie, they tried really hard to take the kids show and put it on the big screen by giving them these weird shiny outfits that made it look more Hollywood production-esque. And of course, like, we don't get the original cast, we get the second season
2.0 cast.
2.0 yep. cast after after the
original, Trini had left.
Well, Trini, Zach, and Jason, those actors, they wanted more money, and the Saban said no. so then they just kind of wrote them out of the entire series, which sucks because I think it would have been more powerful had you had those three in there, because I know from even my perspective as a kid, I was way unfamiliar with the new guys. Like, I knew Tommy, Billy, Kimberly, but I didn't know the new guys that much.
It was Ashley, Aisha, and
Adam. It was Adam, Aisha,
Adam.
And Rocky.
Rocky.
Rocky was was the new Red Ranger. And that first movie, it has some cool parts to it, but for the most part, I kind of feel like it's a flop.
It's really strange. It does not necessarily hold up. If you go back and watch it now, I watched it like last year, I want to say, or 2 years ago. It's like I said, it's been a time, mm-hmm. so details are a little bit fuzzy, but I just remember a couple things about that movie. I still loved it because I was such a huge Power Ranger fan. When they recast and they brought Rocky, Adam, and Aisha in, I was like, oh, okay, so that's what happens. They're new Rangers. That's like, okay, good storytelling and whatnot. But visually is where they got me. That movie had great visuals for the time. Now, you look back now and the CGI is not that great. And like a lot of the fight sequences with the Zords look awful. But the heart is there. They wanted to capture the TV's energy, the energy that that show had, mm-hmm. and give it to the big screen. And in a lot of ways, they do. They do a really good job of being true to themselves. Is it a perfect movie? Not even close. Is it a great movie? Not even close. Like, it probably wouldn't even be like top 50 if I made a top 50 list, you know. Probably not top 100 if we're being really, really honest. But it does have a special place in my heart. And I do think if we're going to do a reboot, if we're going to get, you know, something different, because you had the first movie and then Turbo was second, right?
Yeah. Turbo, real quick, I think Turbo kind of fit in a little bit better with the TV verse because it was the lead into the Turbo season, like, essentially.
Yep.
But it felt like it belonged with the TV, whereas the movie almost is like a one-off because they kind of redo the storyline without like bringing the ninja stuff in. I didn't like the way they did that at all. Turbo actually is like, hey, this is a movie that we're going to just use as a you know, tent pole for our TV series.
As a vehicle to send you Power
Rangers,
no pun intended.
As a vehicle because it's Turbo. And I hated the idea with them bringing in a kid, and when he morphs, he gets turned into a teenager. That's ridiculous.
Well, to be fair, let me say this. Zhu Ranger and Die Ranger that Power Rangers was created on. Die Ranger, DAI Ranger. The White Ranger was a small child who morphed into a full-size adult.
Okay, so
initially.
What was that first one you said?
Zhu Ranger.
It's okay, that's not what I thought you said.
Z-Y-U.
Zhu.
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 Ranger.
Okay,
yeah.
Because I heard J-E-W.
No!
I'm like, what the hell is going on?
Mazel Tov!
Holy shit, dude.
We're here. No. We can't name the episode Jew Rangers either.
No, we cannot.
Bad form. We cannot do that.
Nope.
In trouble, we would be.
In trouble, yes. Okay, so they did the Turbo one. The more recent one they did, it was 2015 or that they released that movie or something like that.
Yeah.
I kind of liked it. I thought it was pretty good. It wasn't perfect, but I thought it was good, and I thought they had some good guys in it. And, of course, the guy that played Jason in that movie ended up playing Billy from Stranger Things.
And the guy that played that was the Ninja Turtle guy. He ended up playing Hawk in the Titans verse. Alan Richardson or whatever.
And of course Bryan Cranston plays Zordon. I like the cool little callback that they did in what they creatively did to make Zordon the Red Ranger and Rita the Green Ranger from a bygone era from a long time ago. I think that's cool because it extends that because who and what was Zordon before he got put inside a life capsule, right? Supposedly he was a ranger, right? Or
he's never seen it.
Never seen it, but I liked it. I thought it was neat, and if you're going to do it differently, I was on board with it, and I was on board for another one. I felt like, was it perfect? No, but was it a starting point to do something
cool? Yeah, you could have built upon it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, because, you know, the movie took a little while to get there, but I felt like by the end of the movie, I was excited like I was when I was a kid watching the TV show. Like, man,
yeah,
this
like
is
how cool. Are they going to solve it? How's this going to play out?
Yeah.
I do remember, I want to say last year I watched that finally, or maybe it was I reviewed it on the show, though, and had opinions, and I didn't think it was that bad then either. You know, it's like, it's decent. It definitely is decent.
They made some creative twists, like Goldar being just a Zord instead of like an actual character. That's interesting.
Yeah.
It didn't kill it for me. It was a bit of a downer, but it didn't kill it for me. Again, you know, that's something that we as nerds and longtime fans of things and of series, we just need to keep our minds open and don't just close it off just because there's one thing that maybe we don't like about it. You know, it's like, overall, did Goldar ruin the movie? No. No. Would Goldar have saved the movie? No. He just would have been, Rangers, I will hit you. You know, no. That's the only difference. If he would have been a Zord that said, Goldar, we'd have been, hey, it's Goldar.
Yeah. terrible execution with that idea. Goldar! Oh, that guy. Okay, cool. Fucking awesome.
That's why I don't make the movies, guys.
You know, I think here's my issue, Brando, and I'm gonna come real with you on this. I think my biggest drama with that first movie was visualistics. And I mean that by, I didn't really enjoy the Ranger suits. I thought that they weren't as sleek or as cool looking, especially when you're trying to call back to that first generation of Power Rangers. Like, come on, man, do better. Be better. Like, don't be so, you don't have to be so weird with these like blue shiny orbs and shit. We don't need that. That's unnecessary. It's not Power Rangers. I also thought that the Zords didn't look as great or awesome as they could have or been utilized as well. So those are really my main complaints, and that's kind of what makes Power Rangers, the suits and the Zords. So story, great. But if I'm going to do a sequel, okay, there's a lot to improve upon. It looks like they're going to do a reboot instead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This reboot also is tied with something else that's going to interest you. You know that because Hasbro is just on I think they saw what Marvel did. Like, oh, they made a fuck ton of money with their properties, actually utilizing them accurately and like buying into what the fans are saying. They're supposedly doing a Beast Morphers live action as well, like a TV series.
Oh, really?
Yes. I don't know. I don't think it'll be Beast Machines, but it'll be Beast Morphers from that same universe. So we'll
see.
Transformers,
you mean?
No, Beast Morphers. There, it's like the evolution of Beast Wars and Transformers. I think that was the next step they went, was Beast Morphers. Let me see if, unless they wrote it wrong in the damn article.
I remember Beast Wars and Beast Machines.
What?
As,
no.
As I type in Beats.
It says,
No, it's Power Rangers Beast Morphers.
Oh, that's the season that they're talking about. My bad. I misread that. Big fail on my part. I got all excited. I was like, a Beast Machines? Beast Morphers? Ignore me.
Yeah, and trust me. I know. It's still early for you.
Oh, my gosh. This is cool. So here's some reports on that reboot. The report states that all new Ranger team will not necessarily be limited to the five Rangers and will include an original lineup of heroes. They're looking to create a truly diverse cast, different races, members of the LGBTQ community, possibly having the female lead, like I said. In the script's current state, which apparently means there is a script that exists, Zed is the villain of the film. The movie will feature several different looks for the Ranger suits and Zordon from Ranger history. The last bit of news is this is potentially shooting in New Zealand. Makes sense. A lot of large area to play with there. There's a lot of new information, and we are definitely intrigued to see if this is true. The time travel aspect that has been reported from several sources looks like it will definitely be included, as well as other sources saying Zed and various swords and suits will be used. So these are all things that are they're building upon. The rumor has been set by somebody, but others are corroborating this rumor to be more more real, less rumor, I guess is what we'd say. More rheumatoid arthritis.
No more. Another thing that we kind of mentioned this before we went on air about companies and properties utilizing the like fan nostalgia and do things that are more what fans expect things to look like and feel like what they know, instead of Hollywood doing their thing and trying to make it something bigger and better, and it usually almost always fails.
Hey, you like that thing in that box, that cardboard box that it's in? We're going to give it a shinier cardboard box, and you're not going to like it as much, motherfucker. Mm-hmm. We're simple folk.
Well, and the thing is that I'm not sure how accurate this is, because I keep reading it, and I'm not... I didn't know that this actually had happened, and I don't know if it's true. So please, we are deviling into a little bit of rumor here. But did Disney acquire the film rights for Dragon Ball?
Hold on,
because I read where Disney acquired the live action film rights for Dragon Ball, and you know what? It was 20th Century Fox. I think Dragon Ball was released to 20th Century Fox, so that means that Disney does now have access to that, barring any pre-existing agreements and time frame, but that Disney is looking at doing a reboot of the Dragon Ball series on live action film and doing it with a primarily Asian cast, and that it'll encapsulate, no pun intended, the Saiyan saga, like with flashbacks to the earlier Dragon Ball segments to fill in some of the gaps that you would need to fill you in on who Goku is and his upbringing and why.
Could you imagine?
Yeah.
Disney doing a Dragon Ball series in live action. Mm-hmm. Disney has already there'll be arguments for days. Have they done Star Wars justice? Did they fuck Star Wars up? That's just a matter of opinion. Take it for what you will. However, Dragon Ball is a very interesting thing because it's something that has never been accurately tackled. There's no bar that has been set that this is a good Dragon Ball movie, so they don't have expectation like Star Wars. They don't have the it's definitely in the Marvel territory where they can set the precedent for what a good Dragon Ball movie is. And then if you do it right, once every 3 to 5 years,
do the next one.
Oh, yeah.
Can you imagine getting a live action? Like the first one is Goku versus Vegeta, so you'd have this like big knocked out, drag out fight at the end, and then of course that blends into the sequel,
Frieza.
And you know what? If done right, you might even be able to get two movies out of the Frieza saga.
And then you could do at least one lead-up movie with the Android saga before Cell arrives, and maybe make Cell your post-credit sequence for that third or fourth movie. and then have a whole movie of Cell Saga and the World Tournament. Like, oh.
Well, and the thing is that I think I've seen a lot of fan live action, you know, stuff, including I think there's like Light of Hope or something like that, where like it's basically a live action retelling of the future, Trunks' future. And it looks so cool when you just think of that. This is a fan-made film, mm-hmm. and they're doing all of this, all these special effects and everything fan-made.
Not a big budget Hollywood now.
No. With Disney, you have big budget Hollywood. What does it need to look like and feel like? It needs to look and feel like Dragon Ball. And I feel like that's where the Dragon Ball Evolution movie fell off. Could I appreciate that they were trying to westernize it a little bit? Yeah, maybe. Yeah, sure. You know, to put a little different spin on it because in a way we've already seen it before, you know? So why are we just watching the same thing over again? But after seeing how hard that didn't work, screw it. Screw it. Let's take the original source and try to be more true to it. Sure, there's things you can't do to the same effect that they did in the anime or did in the comic. That's where you get creative. And then there's stuff in the live action that you can do that you can't accurately do, and vice versa.
Yes, absolutely.
If it comes to fruition, just like the Power Ranger thing, and this is where it kind of ties in. If you're going to do it and you're going to do a reboot, if you're going to reimagine it and put a new Power Ranger thing on screen, now is the best time than ever. We are a nostalgic generation where we are clamoring for things that we knew and loved because a lot of the newer stuff that's coming out sucks.
Or it tries too hard to be something it can never be.
You know, I'm not saying that like every single property that comes out is like that, but it's just like it's hard pressed. You know, like a lot of brand new ideas just aren't hitting the same way, and it's all tastes and it's all opinions and all that kind of stuff. But you're not going to fail by making a property out of Dragon Ball or Power Rangers that pulls on my heartstrings on something that I know. And that's where the Marvel stuff had, where it worked. They told a new story based off old stories and characters. And they did their own version of it on film, but there is more than enough inspiration drawn from pre-existing stories of these characters and characters that we already knew and love. And that's where the Batman stuff gets interesting too, because when we start getting into the stuff that we talked about in the last couple episodes here on the show, the ever-growing different encyclopedia of Batman projects that are coming out, you know, I'm kind of excited about it because here's the thing. I watched a little bit of Gotham. I didn't really get into it. Why didn't I get into it? There wasn't enough Batman for me. It
comes later in the show. You got to cook.
But I also did not like the version of Gotham or that version of the Batmanverse. I just didn't get into it. I didn't like it. I didn't like where they went with it. And that's fine. I don't have to like it. Sure. But I'm not going to sit there and shit on it and say it's bad because I didn't like it doesn't mean that it's bad. You know, obviously you really liked it. So what do we do? Okay. I always wanted a Batman series that followed the Batman, you know, whether or not that be like what they've done with some of the other series. I would want a more cerebral series, you know, maybe like I almost said Dexter, but that's not right. But the Batman, like, you know, living his dual life, you know, his Bruce Wayne persona and how he's got to fake those interactions. And then you have the Batman persona where he's solving crimes and going after dudes. And then there's like a big bad for the season, you know, is it a villain? Is it Mask? You know, is it Black Mask? Is it the Penguin? Are we getting the Joker yet? Is it season 4 or 5? Are we getting the Joker? You know, I always thought it'd be really cool to get like a 10-season run of a Batman series that escalated as the series went on, and you got like, you know, you touched base and you could do different cool stuff with the villains. You know,
God, and your final season is Hush, because that's like the most climactic story. I'm there for it.
One of the stories that I always wanted to adapt into a live action was when the villains try to team up to take down the Bat and like basically try to reveal his identity like to the court or whatever. It's like he's a bad guy.
Not a good guy.
We're we're the victims here.
I don't know. We've done a beautiful job of segueing into this Batman stuff because, you know, we are getting another Batman series, sort of, but it's more like Gotham and less like Gotham than ever because it's now just about the GCPD.
Yep.
And then that's a very interesting thing to play with because, okay, look at the times we live in. There's a lot of civil unrest. Police aren't necessarily the highest regarded workers in the world right now. There's a lot of strife over how they're doing their jobs, their lack of training, things of that nature. We could do a literal whole podcast on. So for Matt Reeves to go, okay, well, I want to create this Batman standalone universe with my Robert Pattinson, and I'm going to do a GCPD story as my TV show spinoff. It's really dangerous territory because, one, you're either going to overly glorify police, or two, it's going to really pull the veil back to what kind of people actually work in the police, especially considering of all police departments as examples of corruption, Gotham's is the most corrupt.
Yeah.
So it does lend credence that it could be a clever concept. The thing it needs, though, there's a couple things this has to have in order for it to actually work. One, less Jim Gordon. No offense. If Jim is the main focus of the show, it's Gotham all over again. But I don't want that.
Well, here's the thing. Let me interrupt you. There's a huge difference as to why that could work if they went with Jim Gordon being a main character. And that's because the guy they got playing Jim Gordon this time around,
okay,
Jeffrey Wright, oh my God. He's phenomenal.
Oh, he's amazing. Yeah.
He is phenomenal. Like, he played in Westworld, and I fell in love with him on Westworld. Great actor. And so by that alone, if you're saying, hey, here's a Gotham PD with us building up this, not doing what they did with Gotham. I hope they don't just, retread water here. And I don't think that's their intention. What I think that they're trying to do is that they're trying to introduce you to this world that they're building for the Batman. And depending on where Jim Gordon is, is he already commissioner? Because I think that's a better story. Then, oh, he's just an officer. We got Gary Oldman, and then with Gotham, where he isn't.
Yeah.
If Jeffrey Wright is the commissioner and his entire PD is corrupt and he knows it and he's combating it left and right, it shows him as like the guy who's trying to do the right thing but doesn't have the resources to do it.
Yeah. I actually would love that. That could be clever. But then there's still two things you still have to have. You're going to have to utilize a lot of different villains. And I'm not just saying all the villains you already used in Gotham, because again, you cannot retread water.
Yeah.
Give us a Two-Face on a TV show version where we see Harvey Dent, who is, you see him as a normal dude. And then like season three, it fucking breaks loose. That would be amazing. Or give us Clayface. Give us a Clayface story. It's a totally different out there character that's never been utilized that could actually be really cool to see done right. You look at other ancillary bat villains. We could get another iteration of the Scarecrow. It's been a little bit of time. The Gotham did it and it was great, but I feel like an adult, because see, the Scarecrow in the TV show is more of a kid. He's like younger, but he's still, unhinged. An adult crazy Scarecrow that could you could have a whole episode where everything seems weird and you're not sure what's off, and then it's revealed you're just in one of his fucking fever dreams. Very clever. There's a lot that can be done, but you have to look at the well of Batman villains, pull all the best options that maybe haven't necessarily been used or given the right spotlight, and then go from there and swing for the fences. I guess I'm gonna pass judgment once we see a trailer. That'll probably be when I can really say for sure, like, oh, I think I will like this or I will hate it.
Well, and here's the thing, is that you also have to keep in mind that they are trying to build essentially what they're already calling a trilogy. They're already giving Matt Reeves his own trilogy. And this series is supposed to be kind of a lead up. So what I would do is don't be focusing too much on trying to build this big, long, successful 10-season show, because that's not what you're doing here. This series is set to accentuate this world and accentuate the bigger properties of the movies. So that's what I would do with it. Lay the groundwork. Yeah, lay the groundwork for the world that you're going to be entering to, and that you're anticipating Bruce Wayne's arrival. Whereas Gotham built up for that for seven seasons or whatever, this would not be five. That.
It was only five.
I'm just throwing a number out there.
It's fine. I wish it would have been seven. It would have really popped off because season five ended with him starting to officially wear the bat suit and shit. And I was like, oh my God, we're going to get it. And then, of course, it was over. So. Yeah.
But I just kind of feel like use it as like an auxiliary work. Use it as a way to get more of that world, whereas the movies are going to be more focused on building the character, like especially the first one, building the character of Pattinson's Bruce and Batman. Because what I really like about what I'm hearing is that they're really shaping up the movie to be like kind of a mystery. Like he's a detective.
Yes, more detective Batman, less fighting crime Batman.
And I really like that because you don't get too much of that at all in the movies. We see like a tiny bit of that where he's working with Gordon, trying to bring down some of the crime families in the Dark Knight, you know, where some of the cops have to leave the room, Batman comes in and he's like all of a sudden it's like, oh, okay, so the Batman's working with the police on this, you know. But it wasn't this like him working on his own. Like, and also we got a little bit of it because then he Batman Begins, he tosses the file over to I can't remember her name, his love interest,
Rachel.
Which one are you going to, Rachel?
No, you saved the wrong one. No, Rachel. Going crazy.
Anyway, I'm excited to see what they're going to do. A TV series in itself, it's hard for me to get into shows anymore. Very difficult for me to sit down and want to watch a show.
Yeah,
I mean, I have plenty of time to do so. I just, there's nothing. I didn't even get all the way through Westworld season two, and it wasn't the fact that it was bad. We just took a break from it, and now I have to get myself in the mindset to go back to it.
Sometimes you got to psych yourself back up into a show. You can't, mm-hmm. if you don't ride the wave through it, you could just easily lose momentum.
Well, like Chernobyl was like, what, only six episodes? Something like that, five episodes?
Yeah, five or six episodes.
And it was great. It was a little like limited series. And that makes me super excited because the guy who developed and spearheaded that series is a guy who is developing
The Last of Us, right?
The Last of Us series, yes. And I want to
it's going to be great.
I want to see what they're going to do with it because he is so in love with this world that they've created and he wants to do it justice. And it's like, fuck yes, let's get this guy who's already proven himself with a great show that's completely unrelated.
Yes. You know?
But it's a passion project and I definitely want to see that. Now, Nate, there's another story we have that's Batman related.
Yeah.
Joel Schumacher passed away like just a few days ago, about a week ago. Yeah. A few weeks ago now at this point.
I think it's been two.
2 weeks. Yeah. So, yeah. And then of course, you know, he dies. Batman, you know, Michael Keaton says that, he might be coming back. The irony.
He's like, I'll never do Batman as long as Joel Schumacher's alive. Boom. Okay. Yeah, I'm Batman again.
So, it's funny because more recently I was watching Batman Forever. And I was reminded how bad this movie is. I put it on for my kid to watch it. We're watching it together. And I'm just like, my God, this thing is so cheesy and hokey. You could definitely tell the tone shift where everybody looks at Batman and Robin. Batman and Robin is just when they stopped caring about whether or not. You know,
totally.
With Batman Forever, they tried to blend in a little bit of that Burton style in with where they were going with this. Like, essentially, this is like the Dark Knight meets Batman 60s, you know.
66 Batman, 66. Yes.
It's straight, like the only thing here is that, like, Val Kilmer tries to do a good job of portraying a really tortured soul Batman. And whereas, like, George Clooney is just Adam West 2.0.
Look at my nipples.
You break it, you buy it.
Oh, actually, I just quoted that movie yesterday because V's like, hey, check this out. They got this thing now where you can just like buy little tiny dinosaur bones, and then you just get a tray and you just put the dinosaur bones in, cover it with water and freeze it. And then your kid digs out the dinosaur bone like the Ice Age. And my first response was, what killed the dinosaurs? The Ice Age. Oh, man. I busted up laughing. That shit's funny as hell to me. I will say, you know, we're talking about this Joel Schumacher stuff. He passes away and something really interesting kind of hit the rumor mill, and it didn't just hit the rumor mill because it's real. And it's important to know there is a 170-minute cut of this movie. That's almost 2 hours. That's 10 minutes shy of 2 hours, just for those of you who are not certain. It's actually the same length or just a little bit longer than Infinity War, if I'm right, or Endgame, whichever of the two of those were the longer of the two. I think it was Endgame was the longer of the two. But yeah, 170-minute cut of this movie. A lot of stuff seems to have been taken out. I think it only ended up being like an hour and 30 minutes or an hour and 25 or something like that. If we get this, I mean, we've already seen, okay, we're going to get extended Snyder cuts. We're going to get all this jazz.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's a good idea to take something that's from the 90s that only a small portion of fans are really going to clamor for and say, here's the actual vision. This is what we were going to go for. This is Joel's vision. This is, you know, maybe less hokey, more true to the comics. I don't know. I've never seen it, so I don't know.
It's hard to say at this point. It's been so long. We're nearing the 30th anniversary.
We just passed the 25th anniversary, yeah.
Yeah, so maybe that's something that you can do to drive people to HBO Max, just like they're doing with Snyder Cut. You know, hey, you know, extended director's cut of Batman Forever. And if it is finished, that's cool. They didn't want to do anything. If there is some final touches, you can bring on a crew to kind of like clean it up with some effects and maybe do like a 30th anniversary release of it. But I don't know if you really need to. I mean, when it's been almost 30 years after, like,
have you heard of any of the things they wanted to add that were taken out that they wanted to add back, though?
No.
Okay, so let me describe some of these scenes, and you tell me if it would make the movie more for you, if you think it's dumb, if it was too much exposition, whatever. Apparently, the opening sequence of the film is not the sequence we get. The actual opening sequence of the film was Two-Face escaping from Arkham, like his great escape to get out of Arkham, and how that all transpired. There was also an extended scene with Riddler fiddling in the Batcave, finding more things than what we saw him finding and destroying, kind of really pulling back the secrets of Bruce Wayne and seeing some of the, we maybe have seen the coin, we might have seen the dinosaur stuff you don't even get referenced, but you know, might have been bigger picture. Obviously, there's a bulk of the version of the movie that still hasn't been touched on where they featured on more Bruce Wayne. So that's where they lose me. The stuff that got cut was the emotional and psychological trauma of Bruce Wayne, leading to him fighting a third Batman villain that would have appeared in this universe, Man-Bat. But it would have only been in dream sequence.
Okay, and that is something that we've actually seen if you owned any of the works. Like, there was books that came out that had pictures and it featured cut content, and one of the things was him, you know, that bat flying towards him. He, like, there's a scene where he comes face to face with it, and that was like a deleted scene. So yeah, I remember that.
Yeah,
I don't know. I'm kind of up in the air about it. Some of the stuff seems cool, but like Two-Face escaping seems redundant. You know,
he's already escaped. We don't need to know that.
Yeah, he escaped, and so then like the opening scene of him robbing the second bank of Gotham on the second anniversary of the day that he captured him. You know, okay, that's where we should start the movie. Is Batman appearing? The Riddler stuff. That's some cool stuff. You know, finding some like one thing that when you're cutting a film for Hollywood release, you do end up cutting stuff that maybe you don't want to, but also it's like, yeah, well, ultimately this scene is kind of redundant. You know, just like I said about the Two-Face scene, it's like, we don't need to see that.
We don't need to see more. This would have just been an opportunity for it to be extended. Who knows what kind of performance we didn't see out of Jim Carrey in the scenes that were cut. You know, maybe there were some really funny, clever lines or whatever. You know, mildly interested is my final verdict. If they decided in 4 years or whatever, hey, we're going to release the 30th anniversary. Me too.
I would watch
But I'm not going to be like, fuck yeah, let's go to the theater.
I'm not going to be like waving the flag. Like, I'm actually more interested to see the Snyder Cut than I would be this, simply because of
Same.
The simply because of the of the situation surrounding that movie and how it's going to be so different. Even though it won't be different, I don't know. I'm just interested. I'm really interested to see what comes out of it.
And to bring up the Justice League, Snyder Cut verse league, whatever we want to call it, there was actually some more news on the Ray Fisher allegations against Joss Whedon, and this is pretty interesting. Pretty much, this is what Fisher said in an Instagram live stream on a Q&A. He said, "I am still very much under contract and I'm still very much under an NDA, non-disclosure agreement. So I've got to be very careful about what I say and how I say it. Otherwise, I could get sued into oblivion. So just a disclaimer there for folks who are looking for more specifics in the moment right now. I'm sorry I can't give them to you all in the moment right now. I just got to make sure all my ducks are in a row laid out so I can go ahead and handle the situation appropriately so you don't end up being outside of the professional legally liable for anything that could be litigious, meaning litigation against them for saying something that's not necessarily true or whatever that would be. This will take some time. We will get it done. We will win. And then we'll be able to move on into the world. That's it," is a quote from Ray Fisher. So he's got shit to say and cannot say it. Who knows what that is? The fact that here's a little looking at from the top of the fucking mountain down, the fact that Warner Brothers allowed Joss to do what he did, and then instead of being like, "Joss, dude, bro, you can't abuse actors or say shit or whatever it is that he did," they said, "Well, the only way we're going to ensure that nothing happens is make all of our guys sign NDAs to ensure they don't talk. And the only way we're going to let them make money on this film is if they sign the NDA." You kind of bully them into a really shitty position that is pretty common, unfortunately, with people who have been abused or a part of some sort of crazy scenario that they've witnessed stuff that, you know, would ruin another's career.
Yeah. So Ray Fisher just shared an article from Metro Entertainment over from the UK. And the headline is "Egomaniac: Joss Whedon faces claims he told Buffy stunt coordinator no one would hire him again and demanded that the stunt double break up with him or leave the show."
Whoa.
Apparently, Joss Whedon has been described as an egomaniac, just like I said, and told stunt coordinator Jeff Pruitt and stunt double Sophia Crawford that no one would hire them again after a disagreement. So I guess the couple who started dating, Jeff Pruitt and Sophia Crawford, while working on the series, who are now married, have alleged to Metro.co.uk that Whedon demanded they break up if Crawford wanted to continue being on the show. And after they refused and found other, they found other directors reluctant to work with them. Pruitt, who has also claimed that his home computer had been keylogged, with one producer allegedly confirming that they had copies of every email he'd ever sent since he started the show. Interesting.
Whoa.
The stunt coordinator said, "We had a great relationship, Joss and I, but he changed as the show took off. He went from humble writer who used to turn to me for ways to shoot scenes into a real egomaniac who believed his own hype. Then again, maybe he was always that way, and I simply was too naive to see it, as he never showed that side of him to me before. We'd always supported each other." And so Ray Fisher shared that by saying, "I believe Jeff Pruitt and Sophia Crawford. Thank you for you two for standing up and speaking out."
Oh, man. So in this year, we've had allegations of sexual misconduct by Joss Whedon on various sets. Mm-hmm. We've had this now Ray Fisher story. We've now had the Buffy story. Will we get an Avengers story? Was he shitty on that set? Was that where he had to be the perfect child because he was under so much watch, because he wasn't the top dog, because Kevin Feige would come around and shake things up? Is that also why Joss didn't continue on beyond Age of Ultron? many questions now coming from this. And I feel like before this is all said and done, Joss Whedon is going to be outed as a not very, I mean, he's already being outed as a not very good guy, but like there's going to be proof to the pudding that's a lot worse than what we're finding out now. If these allegations from the late 90s television show Buffy are coming to light now, all in regards to this other stuff that's coming to light.
Yeah.
When Ray Fisher, who is now becoming a very powerful actor, especially with the fact he's like, fuck you, Joss Whedon. I don't have to deal with you ever again. I'm going to go work for HBO and they're going to give me a deal of a lifetime to fucking finish the movie we initially made or were intending on making. He's going to wait for the time is right and strike. And I don't know that we will see more Joss Whedon in Hollywood in the next couple of years after and beyond. This will probably be him being blackballed officially.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's, you hit the nail right on the head, because with all these things coming out, people speaking up against him, it makes it more difficult for those, for this, for anybody to move on from it. You know, cancel culture, I have a very mixed bag with cancel culture, because on one hand, when it, where it's deserved, it's deserved, but it's also can be very damaging when allegations are not true.
Or when allegations come back to light from someone who has evolved as a person. Look at your okay, two prime examples of cancel culture, James Gunn and Sammy Guevara.
Yeah.
Both in their modern lives, living their thing, doing things fine, people going back into their past, digging up awful shit they've said and being like, look at who they were. So what, who they were? That's not who they are. People change. Sure, I've said dumb shit. You probably said dumb shit. Everybody says dumb shit at one point in your life because you're only a person and we're all just figuring out how to even sort through our own thoughts. So with cancel culture, you nailed it, just to counter what you were saying, because when it's deserved, it is absolutely deserved. Like, if Joss Whedon has a history of abuse and every fucking thing he's involved with, people keep coming out and saying he's an asshole, looking at you, Harvey Weinstein. Same kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's the same kind of thing. He's a bad guy. Your reputation precedes you and it doesn't leave. If in the 90s you were an asshole and in 2009 or 10 or whenever you were filming the Age of Ultron, you were an asshole. And now when you're doing the Justice League, you're an asshole. Apparently, it just seems to me, if we deduce the one word I kept saying, it's asshole.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's kind of the only place I can go with that, you know?
Yeah. I've seen people, unfortunately, like call out for certain things to be canceled where, of course, we have allegations and where it's not right to dismiss the allegations. We also live in a culture now that decides to make judgment before we have
all the facts,
all the facts. And that to me is detrimental. Because we as people, we're out there, we're trying to make content. If somebody came out today and tried to smear me or you into saying that we did something that we did not do, and all of a sudden, like, wow, man, I thought Brando was a nice guy, you know? But now he's like now he's come, like, trying to trick some woman into sex? Like, wow, I can't believe he would do that. Well, there's a reason, because I fucking wouldn't.
I can't believe it because I would never believe that.
I wouldn't do that. But the thing is that if you just have people who don't know us on a personal level, who see those accusations from maybe somebody that they also know, and like, wow, man, this person wouldn't lie. Well, that's where we end up into a conundrum, because then it's like, if I come out and say no, that's not true, they're like, oh, he's an asshole. He's just denying it. Like, well, there's a reason. It's and that's where we have to have a serious talk and a serious look at how we are behaving in our culture, because I do believe in standing up for what's right. I do believe for people speaking out against, you know, people like Joss Whedon, who have abused people, but I also feel like there are also people who abuse this cancel culture or the Me Too movement for their own. For their own personal gain and to hurt other people. And that's not right.
And that has happened. Okay. So you've got the Me Too movement. Now you've also got the speaking out movement that happened in wrestling. Yeah, that's been a more recent thing. And unfortunately, names that had nothing to do with this were getting drug into the mix. Just like you're saying, personal agendas. Oh, I could right now. There's a big rumor that all these wrestlers are assholes. If I put this one name out there and it gains any traction, it's going to be hard for that person to refute, even if it's not true. because you're going to get, well, what about this situation or, you know, whatever. And it's very difficult because unless there's film of it, unless there's proof in the pudding, you were there, you understand the context of everything that's happening, it is impossible. And I don't mean this to victim blame or anything, but it is impossible to say one side story and their version is absolute as to opposed to the other person, because perspective is different. Perspective is only one to one. I perceive the world in a certain way and I perceive events in a certain way. And you and I could live the exact same moment. I could tell you about the Metallica concert we went to and have a different perspective of what I saw and how I felt than you do.
Yeah. We can't look at a situation and delegitimize, victims. We definitely Correct. Can't. But like, since we're moving into such a way as a society of is to instantly, as you said, cut off those accused abusers before we have a chance to hear what happened. And when it comes to situations like this, where we have more than one person, we have multiple accounts of someone being an asshole or being a sexual predator or whatever. You know, then it becomes more difficult for that person to, you know, then it's like, okay, maybe there is some truth to this, you know, and that people are just kind of afraid to speak out. But like, I just saw recently where, I don't know if you, do you know who Angry Joe is? He's a dude on YouTube.
I don't think so. Yes. Angry Joe reacts and he's like yelling about everything.
Yeah. 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 It's a gimmick, yeah. Right? So, you know, he's a YouTuber and he had a fellow YouTuber that he had met somewhere. A young woman who claimed that he made all these advances and was like a sexual predator towards her, and he absolutely denies it. And eventually she just deleted the tweet and everything.
Because it wasn't real. There was no substantiated evidence.
Possibly not. And see, the thing is that just as a person on the outside of it, I just was hearing these things and people Sure. were like trying to back Joe and people were trying to back her. And all of a sudden it's just like, but those statements are out there now. About Joe. So like, even if if she made those up completely,
it still has tarnished him at all.
It has tarnished him because now it's forever out there. Angry Joe, sexual predator, even if he never did anything. And that's bullshit. That's bullshit. You know, it's like, please don't abuse this. You know, if you're true, yeah, speak up because it doesn't do any good for you to stay quiet. And to give and to let these people keep their power over you or whatever. These people shouldn't be out there in the zeitgeist, you know, promoting themselves as a certain image when they're really another. But when there's falsehood, I mean, I think something should happen to the person. I think a real investigation should happen, and the person who said the falsehood should have charges of defamation, you know.
Yeah, or at least have some sort of fine. Be like, you can't just emblazonly construe someone's character because you're tarnishing them, you know? Yeah. And it's not, oh my God. Okay, so side note, Brando, you just glitch froze for a second and your eyes were like, like you were like stroked down. It was like, whoa, oh my gosh.
It's a good thing. You know, hey, you know, we've had some pretty good quality ever since the very beginning of the show. We haven't had any real big hiccups.
Of course, which is good, which is what I hoped because I forgot to mention this. I moved my router to a higher location. And ever since I have done that, I've gotten like 500 megs a second plus every time I test.
Oh, yeah.
So apparently where it was at was just killing everything in our house. I digress. To talk about people speaking out, another person is speaking out on something and it's not, I don't know if this is the same level of like what happened to Ray Fisher. I don't think this is probably even the same level as what's happening in the speaking out movement or the moving, you know, this, you know, any of the in Me Too movements and whatnot. But Robert Kirkman recently laid some pretty vast claims. Do you know about this?
I saw the headline.
Okay, so Robert Kirkman, the creator of The Walking Dead, quoting, saying he was treated like crap while writing for Marvel Comics, and his time there was not a good fit and very restrictive. Here is an exact quote from him. He said, it was very restrictive. I mean, I have a great relationship with Marvel's executive editor and senior vice president of publishing, Tom Brevoort. I think he was a fantastic editor. I loved working with him. However, Joe Quesada and I do not get along. There were a lot of things I got blamed for that didn't really happen. And I would explain, that's not what I meant by that. What are you talking about? And then they'd get more mad at me. According to Kirkman, word balloons that appeared on the cover issues of Irredeemable Ant-Man were added without his knowledge or approval. I'd be like, why would you put a word balloon on the cover of my book without telling me or running it by me or letting me know or letting me write the dialogue? Or I don't know, God forbid, letting me just do the word balloon. I think this is a bad looking word balloon. I don't like this dialogue. I would have taken my time to do this right. I don't know why you guys just wouldn't let me do it. It got to the point where they wouldn't promote some of my books because some of my books were lower tier books and there's a marketing budget. It only makes sense to market the books that are going to make revenue as opposed to the books that are not going to make a lot of revenue. And that's the other thing. I was completely realistic about my status or lack thereof at Marvel while I was there. They do show the Irredeemable Ant-Man cover and the word bubbles really kind of overencumber it. Apparently when he offered to arrange his own media interviews to promote his books, it just drove them nuts. They were not cool with that. So he responded by saying, you want me to just do these books and not try to sell them? I don't understand. Look, the fact of the matter is I was a self-publisher who had gone to work at Image, and Image is a very free environment. If you've done self-publishing, Image is the very best place to be because you're capable of doing everything. So then I get to Marvel and I'm like, I can do all this stuff. I'm willing to handle all this stuff and I'm willing to help out. And it was just not a good fit. They read that as arrogant, like I'm better than them and I can do this. No, it's just that I care about the books more than a lot of writers care about the books. I care about all aspects of my books. Finally, just to lead into this, during a planned stages of the Ultimate crossover, Kirkman got into a big fight with Quesada when he sought clarification about whether the event would be collected in a Spider-Man or X-Men hardcover after other Ultimate Marvel limited series, including Ultimate Six, a Spider-Man crossover, and Ultimate War, pitting superhero team, the Ultimates against the X-Men, were collected in hardcover volumes of Ultimate Spider-Man, Ultimate X-Men, respectively. As a writer, if you're writing Ultimate War, you're not going to write a very important Spider-Man scene that is continuity heavy that is going to be a missing piece when you read through the Spider-Man hardcover. And when you're writing the Ultimate Six, you're not willing to do a big X-Men scene that's going to be missing when you do the X-Men hardcover. So we're planning the Ultimate event, and I say, is this going to be an X-Men leaning event? Is this going to be a Spider-Man leaning event? What is the way that this leans? So I know that I've got this big story I'm doing with Nightcrawler. I'm not going to touch on it in this event because the event is going to be collected in Spider-Man hardcovers. It's a very, I thought, basic question. However, here was Quesada's response. And Joe Quesada writes me back in this email. It's like, why don't you worry about the story before you worry about your X-Men royalties? Who cares about where a book is collected and who's getting royalties from that story? Why don't you just focus on writing? What is wrong with you? My response was, I don't think I said this, but my response was, I'm making a nickel and a dime for you assholes. I'm making crazy money all the time from Invincibles to Walking Dead. My collections are doing great. I'm working for nickels over here at Marvel and getting treated like crap. I get yelled at all the time just for trying to put an extra level of care into the books. So that's really what it got down to. I think they resented the fact that I didn't need them, and it was a constant problem. And that's where he ends his quotation on how he was treated his time at Marvel, man. What do you think about this?
It doesn't really paint a good picture, does it?
Well, it doesn't paint a good picture. It does not surprise me because I've heard Joe Quesada is not necessarily the greatest guy to work with because he also, like Kirkman, can very much do things on his own. So you have two very powerful heads that are trying to make their own decisions. And one kind of, it seems, Joe Quesada had kind of a preconceived notion on Kirkman. Maybe when Kirkman comes into Marvel in his time, you know, it was just in the middle in the heat of him really killing it in The Walking Dead. So they were probably reluctantly working with him, and they got Marvel Zombies out of it. I mean, that's probably the coolest thing Kirkman did his time with Marvel. But it's really just unfortunate to see this kind of still environment happening where people are just, why can't everybody just, like, being real here, everybody needs to smoke a joint and chill and be happy with each other. That would make the world a better place because everybody's got sticks in their asses, man. Everybody's mm-hmm. so tight. Everybody's so tight all the time. Relax.
That definitely sounds like a Kevin Smith ism right there. Just yeah. Lay back, roll one up, and we'll just fucking chill back and talk, man. Like, and like in a way though, you know, that just kind of sounds like, you know, what, like, unfortunately, and I'm not trying to, like, belittle his statement. a lot of what different people experience at a lot of different workplaces and different people, you know?
Not everybody meshes well.
Yeah, exactly.
No matter how you cut it.
Exactly.
It is unfortunate to hear this thing about Kirkman. He's awesome. We obviously did the Negan Lives review last episode. I do encourage people to go back and check that one out. It was really good. That book is really good. It still sits with me. I like, I'm still thinking about it, and I'm still going, I really want them to do more. God damn it. Please give us an issue too.
And as of right now, he's saying no. He's like, I've got no plans at all. We have no plans. Like he's busy working on other stuff. And it's like, I believe he said it's comforting to know that I have that in my back pocket, that if nothing else ever goes right for me and I need money, then I can I can just do a Negan book and everything will be okay.
That's true. It is interesting to note too, that the second printing of Here Comes Negan with Jeffrey Dean Morgan's signatures have already sold out.
Yep.
And second printings are selling out. So if you can get your hands on the book, I am super stupid, ridiculously lucky that I'll actually have Negan Lives issue one.
Yeah.
They finally fucking a week and change later shipped my order. So here's stupid me though, man. I go back on the site and like I really started to panic because I didn't have a tracking number. It had been a week. I'm like, what is going on? You know, they'd already released, you know, the new books for that week or whatever. And I was like, something's not right. Like they hoed me. Like I'm not getting these books. And then I went onto the Midtown page and the very top banner says, note, all orders will have some status of delay due to COVID-19. We're taking extra precautions to ensure everything gets safely, cleanly to you. No stress, Johnny. And I was like, oh, cool. And then like the very next day, I got the email that it'll be here tomorrow. So today, actually, as we're recording this, it will be here Monday when the episode drops.
All right. So is there anything else for this episode today?
I mean, there's a couple tiny headlines.
Okay, I'm currently being summoned, and I might need to help out with the kiddos. So,
okay,
if you want to talk about that, I will return in just a moment.
Okay, well, I'll touch on this next little segment about the Marvel Studios having a science advisor, if you can believe it, Brando. They have a science advisor, and I'm going to talk about his role and ideas. All right. So, folks, as Brandon steps away for a swishy minuto here, I don't know what the fuck that means. Just reading directly from this article. Sorry for those of you who are watching. My eyes are going to be down a little bit because I am reading this article, as you see on my phone. But it says that Clifford Johnson, who is a theoretical physicist, who actually is the Marvel science advisor, who is used in many different movies for Marvel, main real purpose I think they saved him for was to figure out how to do time travel in Endgame in at least a smart, clever way. He's helped out a lot. He's helped on numerous projects, various points. So when Marvel science-based heroes come to the forefront in the next phases, he's going to have a larger role, obviously. And actually, Johnson told IndieWire some of his ideas about bringing the Fantastic Four to the MCU. Wakanda and the Fantastic Four should connect at the beginning. I know how to do it. Then he mentions Black Panther's scientist background in the comics. I think it would be a cool wink to the comics, another way to show diversity in science, to have the entry point of the Fantastic Four in the Marvel Cinematic Universe happen because Wakandans discover them in some extra dimension and bring them into the MCU. If they call me, I'm willing to go to town on that. That is so my jam. Reed Richards was taking his team and they were going to do going off into weird higher dimension stuff, the stuff they're trying to understand now in real science. So I would love to have the opportunity to help them make that look great and to weave it into the story. Now that's really a cool concept because as most comic fans who really dive into the universe know, T'Challa first debuts in Fantastic Four issue 52. That was like, I want to say that's like 1971 or something. It was very early in the Fantastic Four era. But his appearance is clever in that story, and I'm not going to spoil it. Make sure you get your hands on it. But I think it'd be a cool callback and a reverse reference to have the Wakandans bring him in. And it would be like, what about a really nice little Easter egg for the Black Panther 2 after credit sequence, you know, it's maybe they've picked up a signal, and the whole movie they're trying to figure out what this signal is and where it's coming from, and they think it has something to do with the main villain of Black Panther 2, and shocked and surprised he's like, I didn't send that signal. I have nothing to do with that. It's not me. And then boom, the after credits sequence, they lock onto the signal and pull the Fantastic Four through, who are already suited up and ready to go. And they're like, oh, you know, we've been trapped in the negative zone for X amount of time. Maybe you could have them be out of time characters, kind of like Cap, who, you know, maybe they've been gone for like 25 years, but never aged or whatever, however you want to do it. I'm not really certain, but this is one of those things that, when I read it, I was like, man, why didn't I think of that? Like, that's so clever. That's a super clever reverse reference. And of course, you know, here moving into the future, you're going to have your X-Men coming in, your Fantastic Four coming in. We're going to have Young Avengers possibly coming in. A lot of team ups, a lot of teams. Got to think of different clever ways to make these teams make sense. And the Fantastic Four team, they're the first family of Marvel. So they have to be done, and you know they will be done right, but they have to be executed in a way that is impactful and pulls you further into their story that they're telling over these multiple larger sagas, Infinity Saga, whatever this next saga is going to be. Who knows, maybe it'll be the Invasion Saga. Maybe that's the clever thing, is to not speed round into getting to the Skrull takeover, but slowly through this next set of phases have your superheroes just randomly get switched out, and we don't know when or where. And maybe there are tiny little clues, like Nick Fury left, that he's a Skrull and not actually Nick Fury. Yeah, I like that. I like that. Now, as far as other headlines are concerned, because I know Brandon has got a lot on his hands, as it were. This is another little headline that I saw. Ryan Reynolds talking about how it is time for the R-rated MCU Deadpool movie to happen. Here is some direct words from him in his hold on. Okay, where is it? Where did it go? So I think this is from, is this Reynolds maybe? It says, I don't feel like an insider at all. I think once I'm more intimate with it, if we get to make a Deadpool 3, if or when we get to make a Deadpool 3, I'll probably have a better perspective on that. I'm a huge fan of Marvel and how they make movies, so when Disney bought Fox, I only saw that as a good thing. Deadpool hopefully being allowed to play in the sandbox, I think, is just a win for everyone involved, but we'll certainly see. Man, I don't know. I really, I don't know what the future will hold for Deadpool. Bob Iger having Deadpool in his like banner and whatnot, we talked about that like several episodes ago. I think that's nice because it does show that he considers Deadpool to be a franchise that can make a lot of money for Disney. And realistically, if you're going to release the Deadpool movie, here's my play, as Brando is successfully returning to us. If you're going to release the Deadpool 3 movie, you can't release it directly under a Disney banner. We know that 20th Century Fox is gone. We know that Fox Searchlight, I think, is gone. And now that's been morphed into 20th Century Studios. So, Brando, as I was discussing slightly on the Ryan Reynolds talking about it being time for an R-rated Deadpool to come out for Marvel, I think the only way you can do it is you don't release it directly under the Disney banner. It can't have the castle at the beginning and that shit. It doesn't play right. It has to be from a different studio, even if it's still a Disney-owned studio.
Absolutely. Well, you know, they used to own Miramax back in the day. So, you know, like movies like Pulp Fiction were financed by Disney. You know, I mean, as much as that's like at the time, even like a smaller budget movie, you can't imagine like the whole Disney castle thing at the beginning of Pulp Fiction, you know?
the fucking thing shoots over, it's Disney, and then you hear bam. Oh, that's funny as shit. And while you were gone, I did briefly touch on the scientist that has his clever concept for bringing the Fantastic Four in, which I loved to briefly quickly fill you in on that. Essentially, he wants Wakandans to discover an alternate dimension and pull the Fantastic Four through, which makes sense. It's clever. It's different. Then you don't have to be like, why wasn't the Fantastic Four involved with Thanos? Why haven't they been here for any of these other things? Because they were not in this dimension at all. They were fighting their own battles and shit. And Wakanda is the technological precipice of the fucking world, according to the MCU.
Well, I mean, it's the closest thing emerging magic and tech. You know, you can.
Yeah,
they're already like seemingly starting to open up that door with the Doctor Strange, and in
the multiverse of madness. So, yeah,
like, you know, that can be like, you know, no pun intended, but opening the doorway kind of to that, where, you know, yeah, so kind of cool.
Hell yeah. I don't really have any other headlines other than the top movie in the box office right now, which I'm excited about. Are you excited about?
Oh, yeah, I am. It's amazing, and it's surprisingly one of my favorite movies of all time. Yeah, even now. Like, yeah. It came out of the blue, and it was just like, wow, I didn't expect this movie to be one of my favorites of all time, but it is.
Yeah, and it's crazy that this movie that is number one at the box office is 40 years old. Am I reading this headline right? 40? 4-0?
Yeah.
Empire Strikes Back is 40 fucking years old. Hey! Okay, God, time is 10 years from 2030 is the 50th anniversary of this fucking movie. Holy shit, that's crazy to me.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll get the original cut. Spoiler alert, there's not really many. There weren't really a lot of huge changes in Empire when they redid it, were there? Like, there's just a couple added scenes, I thought.
Well, out of the entire original trilogy, I think the second movie has the least added special effects stuff. Like there's some stuff there, but like it's the one that has like
no do-backs.
Yeah, nope, no do-backs.
No weird singing fucking mouth creature in Jabba's palace that, you know, or whatever the fuck it was. I don't really remember. I always am like, oh God, why do they put this in this movie? But no, obviously with coronavirus, with Corona Mania running wild, brother, movie theaters can't be opened. A lot of California was about to reopen their movie theaters, and then they're like, oh, bad idea. Let's not do that. We're going to kill everybody.
Yeah.
And for what? Because there's not really many movies that can be released or planning to release right now. So what are you opening for? Are you opening for indie titles that aren't going to make much money anyways? Like, I know you want people to be out doing things. I get that we are all going stir crazy, but jumping to doing stupid shit like this is how we all die. So obviously there was like a, how do we do it a different way? Let's go back to the old school, man. Let's have drive-in movie theaters. But no, let's not just have drive-in movie theaters where everybody are packed on top of each other. We're going to space it out more. Less people at a movie. Do some double features, you know? This being played in drive-ins is awesome. I've seen Jurassic Park has been played at drive-ins. Twister has been played at drive-ins recently. It's really cool because, I mean, a few years ago, I think I was talking about how, like, the Harvest Moon drive-ins in Gibson City were, like, one of the last drive-in theaters in existence. Like, they were, like, one of maybe 10 or 15.
We have one right down the road from us here.
Really?
Yep. And when I drove by it last week, they were open, and they were showing last week, and they showed The Goonies and Gremlins.
So what I think is, because that's what was showing up in this area, too, they must have all the drive-ins just agreeing, like, we're all going to show these double features at the same time. We'll show Jurassic Park and Twister together. What's coupled with Empire? Because it's Empire Strikes Back and then something totally different. I don't remember what it was.
I remember that, yeah. Like, it was something it was Black Panther.
Yes, it's Black Panther. So a movie 40 years old and a more recent Oscar-nominated movie. Yeah. I mean, I saw Black Panther in theaters. You saw Black Panther in theaters. Mm-hmm. We all pretty much saw Black Panther in theaters. It was great. Not something that's going to drive me to the movie theater to be in a drive-in to watch. However, with a nice sound system in your car that's probably hooked up to the radio or Bluetooth or however the hell they do it now, coupled with the fact that, you know, you're in a different environment. Say if I just go over the border a short distance here, I can have a totally different fun driving experience where I'm just as chill as I can be in the car, watching the movie, you know, doing my thing. Man, I do want to try to get out to a movie in the drive-in before this summer is up, though, just to have that experience again. It's been a time. I think the last movie I saw in drive-ins was in Gibson City. Me, Goebel, John Burt, and whoever the girlfriends at that time were, went and saw X-Men 3. It was so bad. I'd already seen it, though, so I was like kind of just fucking talking and dicking around, probably making out with my girlfriend or whatever at the time. You know, just being a kid. But yeah.
Mine was a lot earlier than that. Like, I don't maybe remember what movies we saw there, but I remember being really young. And yeah, we can't take our kids to that. Not right now.
They go crazy.
Yeah. But I did see there is a somewhere, maybe in France, they're thinking of doing a drive-in movie theater, but you're on boats.
I saw that. Yeah, that's awesome. I don't know how you would keep the boats from drifting unless you have anchors on all the boats.
Well, anchors, and then like what about the speakers and like how's this gonna work? Like nothing about this. Like at first it sounds cool. Then you're just like, man, this is. I don't know if this would be really quite cool. Like, what if you get like motion sickness while you're just.
Oh yeah, because you're sitting there. I guess it's good if you see some water-based movie like A Perfect Storm. you're like, I'm on a boat. I'm in the water. This is super realistic. Fuck yeah. Fuck you, 4D. I'm going back to the movie, the paddle-up movie theater. Oh, that's funny. That's the episode title, probably, paddle-up movie theater. That's good. Oh, shit, man. But do you have anything else to add to this before we dive out?
Not much, man. I'm all tapped out for today.
All right, brother. Well, as always, folks, you can check out the Journey into Comics podcast right here on the Journey into Comics Network at journeyintocomics.com. Get us on Apple Music, Podbean, Spotify, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, CastBox, many others. I think I forgot Stitcher Radio as well up in there.
One of those.
Make sure to check us out every Monday right here on the .com. We will always be here to bring you the nerdiness. Brando, thanks so much for joining me yet again today. Any final thoughts?
None at all. I'm ready to go home.
All right, guys. Well, as always, this has been Journey into Comics 304, the Paddle Up Theater. Or Paddle Up Drive-In. I don't remember what I said. Paddle Up Movie Theater? Whatever it was. I'm Nate.
I'm Brando.
And as always, pop your caps back and fill your brains with shit. Later, guys.